The first step is, there's seven commandments for a Gentile. You got to get with the commandments. For thousands of years, those commandments have been kind of iffy. You know, some societies kept them more, some less. But you got to get with commandments. Commandments means the first step towards realizing I am not the master of my own destiny. God is the master of my destiny. I have commandments. The second step is, beyond those initial commandments, which are seven commandments, I think there are sheets available with the list of the seven commandments. Beyond those seven commandments, the next step is charity. Doing for others. I prepare myself for a reality which is not self-centered by doing for others, by putting others before myself. Now, in modern psychology, that is often seen as something terrible. Putting others before yourself is a sign that you lack self-esteem and you let others take advantage of you. And it's true. From a self-centered point of view, why should you put others before yourself? But from a God-centered point of view, I'm not putting others before myself because they're better than me. I'm putting others before myself because I want to be able to go beyond myself to experience God's reality. So if people would take all the areas of life, okay, and approach each area of life saying, how do I put God before myself? How do I put someone else before myself? People will start to experience an amazing thing. That giving is ultimately far more rewarding than getting. Giving to God and to others is ultimately, I give to others because they are created in the image of God. And that's my way of giving God. When I give to God and I give to others, it's hard to believe. All our natural instincts scream self-preservation, survival, look out for number one. But when we ignore those instincts, and we transcend those instincts, and we look at every situation in terms of how could I utilize this situation to give to God or to give to others who are created in the image of God, then the funny thing is that we end up better off even in terms of our own material needs. Because in a God-centered world, our material needs are taken care of without a struggle. So when we put aside the struggle of taking care of ourselves, and we focus on taking care of God, so to speak, and others, what happens is we end up, in terms of ourselves, being far better off than if we focused and dedicated those energies on ourselves. So the same person, when people talk about business, okay, so your traditional, the traditional concept behind business is, listen, business is made for profits. It's not made for the workers. It's not made for the customers. The business is made for profits. You have to give the customer and the worker the minimum that in order for them to give you the profits, you're going to have to give the worker something, and you're going to have to give the customer something. But you want to give the worker and the customer as little as possible in order to increase your profits. That is the traditional way of thinking. Okay, so that's why there was tremendous struggles against labor unions, and there were tremendous struggles, against workers trying to demand more. Because hey, listen, I'm not running this business to feed workers. I'm running this business to make profits for the bottom line. What's happening in our world? We see our economy shifting from a goods-based economy to a service-based economy. What's a service-based economy mean? A service-based economy means the more you do for the customer, the better off you will be. In other words, your bottom line you don't improve your bottom line by trying to stiff the customer, by trying to squeeze out the worker. The more you include the worker, and the more you include the worker, and you give worker incentives, and you make the worker a part of the running of the business. There's a new management. Management is out, leadership is in. The more the emphasis is on taking care of the worker and taking care of the customer, it doesn't bring a smaller bottom line, it brings a bigger bottom line. When business, what happens is there are businesses that were forced into giving so much to the worker that, and they weren't getting commensurate goods for that. So that causes a business to fall apart. But when the focus is on how can I use this business to make the world a better place, to help as many people as possible. When I look at a situation, when I deal on a business level, and my focus is not what could I do for myself, what could I do to improve my bottom line, my focus is what could I do to enhance the lives of as many people as possible. And that brings in the biggest bottom line. And the same thing when I go into personal relationships. The secret, when people go into relationships, the traditional way of going into a relationship is I decide what's in it for me. I look for the kind of person that I'm going to be able to get the most out of that person. If I'm not careful, and I don't watch out to get what's coming to me, then I could fall into this horrible state of being a codependent. I can end up being taken advantage of. I can end up being used. I can end up being abused, misused, and that's it. So therefore, you got to look out for yourself. You have to look out for number one when you get into a relationship. That's the traditional view. And there's still many people espousing that view. And very powerful cultural influences to live by that view. And yet, the fact is that it's the other way around. When I go into relationships, and I go into a relationship looking for how can I give? Not how could I get. How could I give? How can I focus myself on a point that is beyond self? How could I give? How could this relationship make the world a more moral place, a more godly place? How could this relationship make my life focus less on self and more on being godlike, being giving, going beyond self? When people look at their relationships that way, those relationships are far more rewarding than the relationships which are based on what's in it for me. And the same thing in a relationship with God. There are all kinds of people out there hawking faith. Faith is a big business in America today. Multi-billion dollar business. And they'll tell you that faith can do anything for you. Faith can improve your health. Faith could help you kick an addiction. Faith could help you make money. Faith could help you. And there's all kinds of books on all these topics. And there's chicken soups for the soul. And there's all kinds of books, and they're all based on one thing. How could faith and God help you get what you want? How could you have a relationship with God in which you get what you want? In fact, the Talmud tells us that when King Solomon built the first temple, he on the day that he inaugurated the new temple, he offered to God the following prayer. He said that any Gentile who comes to this building to pray, you should fulfill his prayers, his or her prayers. Why? He says, if a Jew comes and prays and you don't respond, the Jew will probably realize, who am I? If God's not responding to my prayers, there must be something wrong with me. Because his relationship with God is God-centered. And he realizes that if God chooses not to give me something, it must be because I am not a worthy vessel of that gift from God. But if a Gentile is going to come to the same temple and is going to pray to God and not get answered, he'll say, hey, what kind of God is that? What's he worth to me? I prayed and didn't answer. So God agreed. Therefore, any Gentile who goes to the temple, to the place of the temple, where today is the Western Wall, and prays will be answered. Because that's it. Because they can't take no for an answer from God. Because God, and that's why you'll read all of these books about faith in God, and you'll see miraculous responses to prayer. Because that's the nature of the relationship. How could I use God for me, for my ends? The new a new dimension to the relationship between the human being and God is, what could I do for God? What could I do? How can I advance God's program for this world? One of the things that it says, and in the time of the Messianic era, is that the non-Jews will come to the Messiah bearing gifts. What gift will they bear? They will carry Jews to the Messiah as a gift. So what does it mean they will carry Jews to the Messiah as a gift? There was a story of a certain great rabbi that his followers once approached him, that it was known that his blessings, those who received his blessings saw miraculous results, and those who, God forbid, received his curses saw whatever he said was fulfilled. So there was once a certain Jew in town that was a snitch. He used to go, he had fallen from his religion, and he became very negatively disposed towards his own fellow Jews. And he made his living from threatening, became an extortionist, from threatening to go to the Gentile authorities and tell them various lies about various Jews. And that's how he made his living. And people had to pay him, because in those days, if you came to the Gentile authorities in Poland, in Russia, in the times of the nobles, you came in the time where serfdom was still extant, if you came and you told the noble that the Jew did something, it was off with his head. It wasn't a, so the threat was a very real one. And the people came to this rabbi and they said, "Listen, curse him. He's this terrible, terrible, wicked person. He's bringing terrible suffering and calamity upon the Jewish people there. Curse him, that he should die." So the rabbi said, "You want me to curse Messiah's gift?" So he said, "What do you mean, Messiah's gift?" So I'll explain to you. He says, it says that the Gentiles will come bearing gifts to the Messiah. And our sages say that they will be carrying Jews, bringing Jews to the Messiah. What kind of Jews will Gentiles bring to the Messiah? A Jew that's been spending his whole life praying for the coming of the Messiah, as soon as the Messiah comes, he's going to run on his own. He doesn't need to be carried. A Jew, even a Jew that wasn't so observant, wasn't so strongly involved, but he still identified as a Jew, he's also going to want to go. A Jew who was more of a sinner, he might feel a little less comfortable joining up with all these, but still, you know, the Messiah is here, we're going to the Holy Land, we're building the temple. He says, but this Jew who knows that all the Jews look at him as an enemy of the Jews, okay, as a dropout, he's going to be embarrassed. He's going to want to hide. He's going to go show his face to the Messiah. He's going to be embarrassed. And the Gentiles are going to look around and say, "Listen, everyone's running to the Messiah bearing gifts. We have to bring the Messiah a gift. What are we going to bring him? The Messiah, he's not interested in money. He's not interested. What is he interested in? What does he care about? He cares about Jews. Let's find a Jew to bring him." So they'll go and they'll look and they'll look and they'll find in this hiding place, this poor guy, this poor collaborator, that was hiding out because he's embarrassed, and they'll pick him up and they'll carry him and they'll bring him to the Messiah as a gift. So he says, "You want me to curse the Messiah's gift?" So what does that? What does that mean? That means that today we live in a totally unique time, that non-Jews have a capacity to push Jews back towards their own religion, to bring Jews to the Messiah. The reason why. It's only in the last 200 years that we have such a high percentage of Jewish people that are non-observant. For over 3,000 years, the overwhelming majority of Jews were completely observant. Within the last 200-300 years, is the process, the decline, in which now it became a small fraction of Jews that are observant. What happened in the last 2-3 centuries? So the fact is, and most of it happened because Jews were finally, after so many years of persecution and so many years of being the outsider, many Jews felt that they want to be accepted by their non-Jewish neighbors at all costs. So the real reason why most Jews today are not observant is because they want that acceptance. But when the Gentile world is starting to wake up and realize that it's the other way around, that the key to the true purpose of existence is to be found by the Jews, and we have to now start thinking of ways, how could we join up in terms of helping the Jews fulfill their mission and their purpose in the world. So those same Gentiles can now turn around and bring a very unusual gift to the Messiah. They can turn around to their non-observant Jewish friends and say, "What? If you're being non-observant because you're trying to win my respect and my acceptance, you should know I would respect you and accept you far more if you would stand by what you believe. If you would stand by your own religion, you stand by your own beliefs, you'd have my respect and admiration and acceptance far more. If you're selling out your religion because you want me to accept you, you got it wrong. If anything, it's the other way around." So non-Jewish people are in a unique position to, so to speak, create a reverse peer pressure. To create an atmosphere in which a Jew would once again feel proud to be a Jew. In which a Jew will once again feel honored and privileged to be a Jew, rather than feeling persecuted and beaten and downtrodden and therefore trying to give it all up and assimilate. When a person, by creating the reverse atmosphere, that is the ultimate gift to the Messiah, that is the ultimate gift to God that the Gentile world can bring. Is returning Jews to their source, returning Jews to their way of life. So, in the most practical terms, living with the commandments, living, looking for ways and opportunities in all areas of life, we could go into great detail, and we just touched on the pursuit of a livelihood, the relationships, dealings with other Jews, and so on, dealings with Jews in every area of life, if by learning more and studying and finding out how can we bring these ideas of a God-centered reality, of living a life in which I go beyond self, and living a life in which I transcend self, I go out of self, I'm looking for opportunities to give rather than to get. By changing that focus, becoming creating a God-centered focus and an other-centered focus, because we give to the other because the other is created in the image of God. And that extends also to a certain degree to concern for all of God's creation. And one of the seven laws relates to cruelty to animals. Certainly inappropriate cruelty to animals is also something which you find people who go to an extreme and they seem to value animal life over human life. That is a corruption of this concept. But again, there is this concern of, instead of being completely focused and centered on self, to be concerned about the welfare of others, about the well-being of others, helping others, doing for others, and especially looking for ways and opportunities to enable Jewish friends and acquaintances, Jewish people that you deal with and come into contact with, to enhance their ability to live up to their responsibilities and obligations, and that way become a part of that. By being a help and an assistance, by being someone who enables a Jew to be more Jewish, that in return, what you get in return is the ability to connect to that special, unique ability that the Jew was granted at Sinai. He's just born that way. That ability to be able to transcend self and become God-centered. And that is the ultimate preparation for that reality, because the reality is going to be happening anyway. That's it. We've been given notice by none other than the Messiah himself that this is it. It's happening. We just have to get ourselves ready. We just got to get ourselves set in order to be able to appreciate that reality. And in many ways, we see it happening by itself. But again, we can do far more to make it happen, to make it our reality. And that way, each and every one of us becomes a part of that. Instead of being surprised and kind of left out and catching up, we could actually be a part of it and be the ones that make it happen. And we all hope and pray that we should actually see the fulfillment of all those prophecies immediately in our time. Any questions? Or are there too many to...
That's a lot to take in all at once.
Okay.
have a question. You mentioned this economic concept that if all our needs would be provided, then we would, according to the theory, lose the incentive. And you seem to say that in a sense that is not really the situation, that really that, in a sense, will be the ultimate messianic ideal. But how does that correspond to what we actually did see in, let's say, communist Russia? We saw that if that was the way the world, you know, that's the reality that played itself out.
Because the fact is that in the world that we're seeing today, we're seeing people discovering a whole new idea, which is that you can devote your life to helping others and do as well, if not better than, those who devote their lives to themselves. So we have a tremendous proliferation of nonprofit organizations, a tremendous proliferation of charities, and people who are really devoting themselves to one cause or another. And instead of by devoting themselves to a cause, do they lose out on the good things in life? We see that it's very possible for people to do that and not only not have to make, you know, the sacrifices only in the sense of if your focus is self or your focus is others, but material sacrifices initially, and in order, any self-sacrifice requires initially some material sacrifice. But ultimately, those people who made that initial material sacrifice in order to devote themselves to help others prosper. In fact, if you look at the society as a whole, the conservative have been screaming for years and years that by taking too much away in people's taxes, they lose the incentive to work, and therefore they produce less. If you would cut taxes, people would have a greater incentive to work, and if they had a greater incentive to work, they would produce more and the economy would prosper. Okay. So in comes a president who they say, I don't know how accurate what is, you know, it's hard to know unless you really get into it, and I'm certainly not interested in getting into it. But supposedly, before he adopted certain conservative policies, the current president was accused of the largest tax hike in history, especially aimed at the self-employed. Okay, the self-employed took a huge tax hike. So the previous president, the one who asked us to read his lips and about how there won't be any increase in taxes, he increased taxes. Okay, and the current president, who didn't ask us to read his lips, and in fact he promised he would increase taxes, he kept his promise and he increased taxes. So theoretically, according to economic theory, this should have diminished the prosperity. And what happened instead? What happened instead is that prosperity is booming. And not only is it booming, but when in this current election people were offered tax cuts, they didn't vote for it. They didn't vote for one candidate was promising tax cuts, the other one was not. And they didn't vote for tax cuts. They didn't vote for the candidate who was going to give them the tax cuts. Why not? Because the traditional, the way we perceive reality was that the natural link is, the more you give away, the less you have for yourself. Okay? What's happening here is that we're starting to live in a world where that's changing. And it's the other way around. The more you give away, the more you have for yourself. Because it's a different reality. In a God-centered reality, the more you give away, the more you have for yourself. So America, okay, which built itself on helping those less fortunate, is the most prosperous country around. Even if there are other countries that technically, that have, based on certain measuring standards, might be economically more successful, but the average standard of living is far higher in America than anywhere else in the world. There's no place in the world that can compare an average standard of living to the United States of America. And the whole United States of America built itself on a whole unique concept, which is helping those less fortunate. So you have all these people running around saying, let's stop immigration, let's cut taxes, let's stop helping out those who are less fortunate, let them work for themselves. Okay? But the fact is, people don't want to hear that. Some people do because it feeds into their natural selfishness. But many people are saying, no, we don't want to hear that. And yet, we continue to prosper. So people are, so on some level, people are recognizing that part of the prosperity of America is because of its giving nature. And that's why you'll find books today that are saying, if you want to really get, you have to learn how to give. Because somehow, even though, again, the whole premise is only makes sense in a God-centered world. In a self-centered world, it's every man for himself, survival of the fittest. Look out for number one, numero uno. What you get, what you keep is what you get. When you give away, you lost, right? That would seem to be the logic of it. It's only in a God-centered world that it would be the reverse logic, which is what you give, the more you give, the more you get. And that's exactly what's happening today. People are coming to the awareness and realization. And the fact is, and for many people, that itself is tremendously motivating. There was a fabulously wealthy guy who announced last year, I forget the amount, that he was worth $250 million or something like that. I think even more. And he's announced that he's giving it all away. He's only keeping $5 million for himself because that's all he needs. He was in his 60s, and he's all he needs in order to provide for his needs over the next couple of years. $5 million. So he's giving it all away. And he says, really, he wouldn't publicize it. And the only reason he's publicizing it is because he wants others to imitate. He wants others to follow. That's the only reason that he's publicizing. So they ask him, what are you, like, you know, are you feeling all right? Like, what are you, okay, you worked your whole life? And that's it. He feels good. You worked your whole life to give it away? You worked your whole life to collect it, right? Whoever dies with the most toys wins. Okay? And yet, this guy worked his whole life and he says, no, it's the greatest moment of my life. Where everything I worked for, I can give away for someone else. That is preparing for the new reality we're talking about. That is preparing for a God-centered world and a God-centered reality. Every one of these little things, but when we make that our lives, when that becomes our life, when we really start living that way, when we put God first, we put others first, initially, instinctively, it goes against all our instincts. We're looking for self-expression, and we're looking for self-actualization and self-realization and self-development. It's all self. And the psychological world is telling us you need self-image and self-esteem and self, and the problems come in the fact that people are not, I don't have enough self-esteem and I couldn't have self-image. And it's, no. The secret is to go beyond self. The solution to all issues, problems, again, we're working with a limited time frame, whether it's addictions, whether everything that the world is struggling in, the secret is go beyond self. When you get to a point which is beyond self, then correcting all the things in self that need fixing is much easier. When you're into self, you never get out. But when you go out of self, when you go beyond self, and you learn to give, then you get, the returns are far greater than if you would have taken that same time and energy and resources and focused them on yourself. And that's what we see happening in the world today, as we know.
I have another question.
You have to ask the people if they want to sit in here and listen to your questions. Or they want to leave.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering, being what you said before, being a non-Jew and being able to sort of push, you know, a Jewish person to be, I guess, more Jewish, or however you want to say, practice
right.
More, I kind of feel like that would maybe come off as being offensive in a way, like how, you know.
Right, I understand. That's a good point. I didn't mean in terms of telling people off, or kind of like,
yeah, no.
I meant in terms of when an individual shows that that the traditional view of the Jew is something which is, you know, which in other words, if when people will show the Jews around them that their outlook on what is a Jew and it has changed, and that they could see a Jew as a somebody. To be respected and to be appreciated, then the primary motivation for assimilation disappears. Okay, so it's not necessarily I don't necessarily mean in terms of bullying anybody into it, or, you know, intimidating anybody into it. I was just talking in terms of kind of letting people know that that if you're assimilating to earn my respect and acceptance, if you'd wake up to the world around you, you would see that, if anything, you know, it's a different kind of world we're living in today. And the fact is that the role of the Jew is, there are still voices out there that are, you know, spewing hatred and negativity, but the fact is, on a certain grassroots level, people are, there is more genuine respect. You know, when my father, it's not that many years ago, when my father went to work for New York City Civil Service, and he wore a yarmulke on his head, he was taunted, and you know, he was made fun of. He was, and he felt he couldn't go to, you know, he used to wear a hairpiece over his head. He had a special hairpiece made, designed, so that he could go to work without openly identifying as a Jew. By the time he retired, he had grown a full beard and was wearing not only a yarmulke, he was wearing a hat and dogs, you know, because the same people were, you know, instead of that kind of opposition and outright insult and so on, he was treated with respect. So we are, thank God, seeing many changes in this area. We've even heard, you know, statements coming out of the Vatican recently, which go away from the traditional view that the Vatican presented about its relation with Jews and so on. So there's no question that things are moving, generally speaking, in the right direction. But the fact is that that by expressing those same ideas on a personal level, it's definitely a push. I mean, a lot of people I know many people who became religious recently who told me that they were encouraged to look into their religion more by their non-Jewish friends. And that was like what pushed them. They said, hey, if my non-Jewish friends are telling me to look at it, like, if I'm the Jew, and my non-Jewish friend is telling me, like, you know, why don't you look at the religion? So that gave them a push that they wouldn't have had otherwise. I know a fellow who, we have a class together. He was on an exchange program to Europe as a student, and they were traveling around Europe, and they stopped at different sites, and they stopped at some synagogue and some, you know. So one of the non-Jewish girls in the group asked him something about Jewish life, and he had no idea. He didn't know. And she said to him, like, you know, you're Jewish. Don't you want to know more about? And what he said when he came back to America, he looked for an opportunity to find them. And today he's a fully observant Jew, and his children. And I know many stories like this. So that's. You know, the prophet says that the non-Jews will come bearing these gifts. I mean, he is a gift. You know, he is, thanks to a non-Jew, he was returned to his rightful heritage. And that's, you know, it's a very powerful contribution that non-Jewish people can make.